You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. When most of us think of Antarctica, we envision a frozen and desolate landscape that beyond its coastline is largely devoid of life. But a new documentary produced by a filmmaker who is also a Sacramento State Associate Professor is changing perceptions of the frozen continent and revealing how it shaped Earth's climate by going back to the past, but also highlighting its crucial role in shaping its future. Lake at the Bottom of the World tells the story of a team of scientists and engineers following their expedition deep into the frigid world to reach a subglacial lake that's buried underneath more than 3,000 feet of ice, all to gather critical clues of how our relationship with Antarctica could impact the future of all life on Earth. Joining us now to take us behind the scenes is Kathy Kasich, the film's director, producer, and cinematographer, as well as a professor at Sac State's film program. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I watched your documentary on Amazon Prime. It was wonderful. And I've also learned that you've produced a wide array of documentaries. I mean, from the BBC to National Geographic. Where did your story for this film begin?
It began in Montana when I was living there. Sorry. And I was teaching at Montana State University. And I met a professor named John Priskew, and he said, "Oh, won't you like to join my expedition to Antarctica? I can put you on the next grant." And I said yes immediately, and I became a principal investigator on the grant. So with this team of scientists, we all went down together. There were 12 PIs, and I was in charge of the film aspect of that.
Wow. You know, in a previous life, I was reading that you were also a biologist before becoming a filmmaker and also a professor as well. As a producer of nature films with a science background, I mean, I would imagine you have been to harsh environments in the past. But what made filming in Antarctica unlike any other environment that you've worked in?
Well, I would say that it is an absolute desolate environment, as you would imagine. It was very far from any civilization where we went. We flew 300 miles from the South Pole into the deep field, and we camped on the ice for 3 weeks. And there wasn't really much getting away from there. John Priskew, who I mentioned earlier, said, if you need to leave, if you have a problem and we can't get a plane in, you just head to the Transantarctic Mountains over there and take a right. And that meant walking for many, many days.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was different.
I was reading an article interviewing you on this documentary, and you said something to the effect of what may be some people's nightmare was a dream come true for you. Why? How so? What makes you tick in that way?
I love wild places, and I love the feeling of really being on this planet. And I think there's probably no better way of experiencing that feeling of being on this planet than going really to the edge of it, or well, if the bottom of it or the top, depending on your perspective, I guess. But yeah.
What is obviously for me was a huge unknown until I watched the documentary is that there are hundreds of lakes that have been discovered under the continent's ice in Antarctica. When did you discover this, and why are they scientifically significant?
Right. Well, that first happened, I think people had been theorizing lakes underneath the Antarctic ice sheet for many, many years, dating back into the 50s. But ICESat 2, which is NASA's satellite, was pinging Antarctica, and some scientists on our project, Helen Amanda Fricker, she actually discovered that these lakes were likely to be underneath the ice sheet. And then in 2012, John Priskew and his team, which included many of the same scientists that we did, went down to Antarctica and discovered the very first subglacial lake. And then this was the second time anybody had discovered a subglacial lake underneath the ice sheet. So that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah. On the one hand, we're obviously talking about science, but this is also a film. How did you approach storytelling?
Well, I wanted to tell the story of the expedition, but not in that kind of uber dramatic expeditionary style. I wanted to tell the story of the people and also the environment. So my filmmaking style is, I call it sensory verite. And I like to approach things from that sensory perspective, but then also provide enough context and details that you can cognitively really get something from it. But then really feel the environment and feel the sense of the people.
Yeah, there are really long pauses with natural sound where it really immerses you into what it would be like to travel to Antarctica and spend several weeks there, as you did, as well as a team of scientists and engineers. Given that the film crew consisted of you and I believe an assistant producer, Billy Collins, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced filming in an environment that may not be very obvious to viewers?
Well, one of the biggest challenges was just that, you know, when you're breathing, you have like water vapor that comes out and freezes up your LCD screen. That's kind of a problem because you can't see when you're focusing. And we also had a UV light on for sterilizing equipment as it went down the hole. And that also was dangerous for our eyes. And so I had to wear sunglasses sometimes. I also had three rips in my tent. So there was some like, you know, issues with that. I had to get that replaced.
And it was quite windy.
And it was very windy. It was very cold. You know, the general things. Also, the lake was under a lot of pressure. So we had a camera system that was rated to 5,000 feet. But the light that we had actually leaked because it failed under the pressure.
I would imagine those learning curves were kind of unprecedented for you, but also kind of probably really good learning lessons that you can take with you as a filmmaker and cinematographer.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a wonderful experience to be there. And, you know, the collaborations that we gained from it are, you know, things that we'll carry with us through our lifetime as well.
Yeah. Were there ever points, because what you're talking about is that there's so much that can go wrong in conditions that are not conducive to filming a documentary or even science for that matter. Were there points throughout your journey and your trip in Antarctica where you thought that your work was over before it even really started or finished?
Yeah, definitely. When the drill broke, I was really deeply concerned that we weren't going to get to the lake because the drill, we had a hot water drill, which basically like a large fire hose that had hot water in it. And it broke because it had to be transported down there the year before and sat on the ice. And so some of the parts got brittle. So, yeah, that made me wonder what kind of film I was making. But, you know.
And I'm correct in that there was 24 hours of daylight, right, when down there. How did you stay mentally sharp during all this time?
Well, I'm not totally sure I did the entire time, but I think that I felt as though I slept in very random moments and, you know, 4 hours here, 2 hours there. And I used an eye mask to sleep. We worked really hard. I think the adrenaline really kept us going.
Because this was years in the making, and it came down to what, a couple weeks?
Yeah, it was 3 weeks that we were camping on the ice, 3 weeks in McMurdo, so that was 6 weeks total. But yeah, it was many years of planning since 2016 of planning, and so that's a lot of time.
What I love also is that you show these really intimate moments of levity and laughter. What are some of the moments that stick with you? I have a few that stuck with me, but I want to start with you first.
I think I always enjoyed them singing Salsa Navidad, which is a song they made up. And SALSA stands for Subglacial Antarctic Lakes Scientific Access, a very sciencey term. But they just made up a little song, and I always thought it was so cute. That, and then also everybody dancing on the deck, the launch and recovery deck. That was really fun, and I was dancing too, and so was Billy, and everybody was just happy trying to make good vibes for the project, so that was really fun.
And there were Sac State students who were also involved in the post-production, right?
That's right, yeah. Patrick McGill and Molly Fagan were two that were involved. Patrick was the assistant editor, and Molly was doing our social media. And also, Elizabeth DeClear is our producer. She's actually in the Bay Area, but she's not a Sac State student. She was long out of that.
How wonderful, being a student or even a recent graduate and having such a formative experience that really introduces you into cinematography and filmmaking and how to do a documentary right in a very compelling way, but packed with tons and tons of information. At the end of the film, I mean, you summarized some of the findings, but there were like 800 pounds of samples. I mean, what are the big findings that you wanted to highlight?
Right. Well, the biggest, I think, is that we discovered a whole new biome. And that's pretty critical, right? That they were able to look at the microbes that were underneath the ice sheet at Lake Mercer and compare them to other microbes around Antarctica and really discovered that there's a lot of life that's underneath there that's all going towards the ocean, which is changing nutrient cycling worldwide, essentially. And that's a really big deal. And then that was actually published in Nature ISME last month. And then there's another big deal is that, which just came out in Geology, is just how detailed the sediment samples that we were able to get were. They give us like hundreds of years of history of the Antarctic ice sheet, which helps us to understand climate change in Antarctica, which is critical because if we can help to understand how quickly that ice sheet melted in the past and sort of what its pattern was, we can kind of predict what happens in the future. And right now what we're seeing is that the CO2 levels, when there was no ice sheet over this part of the lake, the CO2 levels then were a lot lower than they are today, which suggests that the ice sheet itself is more in danger of collapse than we might have thought.
Yeah. You know, we only have a minute left, but when you filmed this, it was in 2018 into 2019, so that was about 4 years ago. Have you kept in touch with all the people that you profiled?
Yeah, I think we probably communicate like five or six times a month or something. I mean, we're always talking with each other over email, and then we occasionally have conference calls and we see each other at various events. And yeah, it's a lifelong connection. And I think this film, mostly what I want people to know is that it shows a collaboration at a large scale and just sort of what you can accomplish when people really work together. When you take scientists who might normally be competing with each other, but actually here put them into a collaborative space and how excellent that can be for understanding the research and the science.
Well, Professor Kasich, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And congratulations on a wonderful documentary. Kathy Kasich is a filmmaker and also an associate professor at Sac State's film program, sharing her latest documentary, Lake at the Bottom of the World. You can watch it on lots of streaming platforms. We have all of that information on our Insight page. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We'll be back in just a moment.